Dawn McAvoy is from Both Lives Matter, and she's on the line. Dawn, good morning.
Good morning.
Dawn, it is all linked to the ongoing and very loud argument here in this part of the world about abortion. But just remind us what Both Lives Matter actually is.
Thank you. Well, Both Lives Matter is a campaign, a collaborative movement of organisations and individuals, and aware of the ongoing debate on abortion, we wanted to reframe the conversation and challenge the prevailing narrative that abortion is the most progressive and compassionate response in a pregnancy crisis. We have a bigger vision, one that doesn't ask a woman to have an abortion in order to be equal, and one that offers women services and support so that they have a real choice. That's a choice that enables every life. So the campaign is about, yes, the current law, and we wouldn't want to see that changed. But it's also really advocating for better services and changing the culture to enable the law, because the law on its own isn't enough. It needs strengthened and enabled by services and culture.
So where would you be, where would Both Lives Matter be in relation to, say, Precious Life, that is very outspoken, a very outspoken organisation and group? Would you be on the same wavelength, or would you not be as extreme?
Well, we're on the same wavelength in that we would be advocating for a retention of the current law. Both Lives Matter aren't one of our partner organisations, but yes, we would both be similar in defending the law as it stands. We don't take part in street protests, and we wouldn't be standing outside Mary Stopes or anything like that. That's not to say that I'm criticising Precious Life for doing that, but just we're taking a different tack. I suppose really we were trying to rehumanise the conversation. We're aware that there are a lot of people in Northern Ireland who maybe have taken a back seat because of the way the conversation has gone. It's been so polarised and can be quite toxic. So we want to be very careful and very sensitive as a campaign on how we speak into that. And really we want to speak into that common ground where people, I do believe the majority of people in Northern Ireland, want to show compassion to a woman in pregnancy crisis. So we want to meet people at that point and possibly, yes, challenge them if they're saying the law needs to change. And that's where the 100,000 report has come in.
Yes, and this is important. This is important.
Yes,
because
it is very.
This is the figure. This is a figure. You're talking about people who are alive in Northern Ireland today who would not have been born if the 1967 Abortion Act had been introduced here. That's the crux of it, isn't it?
That's exactly it. 2017 is the 50th anniversary of the Abortion Act in England and Wales. So this sort of was the catalyst for us to look back, to reflect on those 50 years. You know, we're in a prime position in Northern Ireland to produce policy, public policy based on evidence. In 1967, no one had any idea what would happen with that law change. And in those 50 years, Northern Ireland has been called backward, misogynistic, repressive. You know, this has all been framed about human rights and women's rights. So we decided to look at the 67 Act and using the figures, government figures, and we've had a leading economist, Dr. Esmond Burney, has taken a look at those figures, and he has said that although there is no absolute certainty about what an alternative Northern Ireland would have looked like if the 67 Act had been applied here, what we, Both Lives Matter, have done in this report is make a plausible and cautious estimate. So we looked at the figures, and considering the fact that women in Northern Ireland are no different to women in England and Wales and Scotland, we applied the same abortion rates across the water to the population here. Yeah. And if women here had had the same option of abortion, we can say that over 100,000 people are alive today who wouldn't have been if the Abortion Act had been enacted in Northern Ireland.
Yes,
so
we think that's
something to celebrate.
Okay, fine, but that's about the 1967 Abortion Act.
Yes.
There's no legislation going through here to pass a 2017 version of the 1967 Abortion Act. The discussion is about fetal abnormality. The discussion, to some extent, is about if the woman is a victim of a sex crime or has been raped. So it's not about 1967. It's much, much, much narrower. So surely you're scaremongering about 1967 and the saving of 100,000 lives when the issue on the table is nothing like that.
So I think those, and I'm sure you're aware of how fast the conversation has moved on abortion in Northern Ireland. So yes, a couple of years ago, there was a concentrated focus on life-limited conditions, and there's a court case ongoing because of that. But you'll also be very well aware that even prior to that, certain organisations here were campaigning for the 67 Act to be extended, and that is ongoing. Then, yes, as I said, there was
There are people who are campaigning.
But there are people who are campaigning.
But let's stick to the issue. The issue is,
which is a legal challenge, but there, and that is ongoing, as I've said. But the conversation has moved very rapidly, and there have been media headlines about abortion pills, the drone, the BPAS helpline, and now the Trust Women campaign, which the RCM are supporting, which is calling for full decriminalisation. And actually, that is far and way beyond the 67 Act. So it would be wrong to concentrate only on a life-limited diagnosis or sexual crime.
But do you, when you, but
the conversation to go a lot broader than that. So we're trying to address it in full breadth.
Dawn, you're very similar, if you don't mind me saying, to Precious Life, because you don't allow anyone else to have a say at all. So that's maybe why I asked you the question. Why on earth, if you have an organisation or a body or a group that is called Both Lives Matter, why do you not have some understanding for the plight of the woman who wants to go through with the abortion in the circumstances of fetal abnormality, or a woman who has been raped by maybe another member of the family, or simply raped by an assailant? Why do you have no sympathy for her right to make a decision about her body and her life if both lives matter?
So I would ask actually why you think I have no sympathy. I am a woman. I have three daughters. I have four nieces.
Why do you not allow her to make up her own mind?
To say I have no sympathy. The campaign, if people take the time to have a look and see what we're saying, we are coming to this conversation with sensitivity and we would say compassion. The fact that we are called Both Lives Matter is because we've made a commitment that we will never talk about only one of the lives that are involved in a pregnancy, and that's any pregnancy crisis, because we don't believe that abortion is a compassionate response. We believe that it's wrong to assume that abortion is compassion. We believe, again, referring to evidence, you can look, we're talking to women who have undergone medical diagnosis for their preborn child, and we've talked to them about the how they were given that diagnosis, the services that are in place, the services that aren't
okay,
in place.
I'm almost out of time. So you totally reject the woman's right to have a choice in any circumstances.
We believe that all life has inherent value and dignity and worth, and the law should protect that life. It's not about denying a woman the option of abortion. It's about saying to society, we can do better than abortion, that women and all of society deserve better than abortion, and talking to women who have undergone those hard cases that you're talking about, the majority of them didn't take up an abortion, and they felt that when abortion is expected, when it becomes a cultural norm, the services aren't in place actually that they would like perinatal hospice care.
Okay, I really do have to go to the news at 12 o'clock, at 11 o'clock. We are going to be talking about the other side of the argument after 11, but this is based on those stats that indeed, if the 1967 Abortion Act had been introduced here, 100,000 people alive today would never have been born. A short time ago, just ahead of the news, and this is basically the point being made by Dawn McAvoy. They believe it's a shocking figure, the campaign group raising the issue that 100,000 people are alive today because Northern Ireland did not bring in the 1967 Abortion Act. A couple of you are saying surely the women went to England and got an abortion anyway. But with that factored in, that some women did go to England and get an abortion, 100,000 people, according to Both Lives Matter, are alive today because Northern Ireland did not embrace the 1967 Abortion Act. And Dawn McAvoy from Both Lives Matter was on the programme just before the news, making the point that both lives do matter, the life of the woman and the life of the baby. Let me speak to Gráinne Taggart, who's from Amnesty International. Gráinne, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
Gráinne, people listening to the programme would expect that both lives matter to Amnesty International as well, the life of the mother and the life of the baby, but that isn't the case.
Oh no, I mean, we absolutely care about the plight of women in very desperate circumstances who, due to our severely restrictive abortion laws, which carry the harshest criminal penalties in Europe, have to resort to desperate measures to access healthcare services to which they are entitled.
But just on the point about both lives mattering, you do not see the life of the baby, and you'll probably refer to it as the fetus, you do not see that life before it is actually born as mattering.
Well, the right to life has never extended prenatally. We are a human rights organisation. We work to the international human rights framework, and it quite clearly says that women should have access to abortion services, not least and at a minimum in cases of rape, incest, and where there is a fatal abnormality. And I have to challenge this figure that Both Lives Matter campaign have been putting out, because what that doesn't allow for, as some of your listeners have rightly pointed out, is those women who have had to travel, not just to England, but to other parts of Europe, and also those women who have resorted to other desperate measures. It used to be obviously backstreet abortions, but now we know an increasing number of women are going online and procuring abortion pills, and there's no way to get those figures, obviously. So it's not a case that our legislation here has been a success, quite the opposite, in fact. For us, what we want to see are changes here so that women can access these services and that her choices are fully supported through the NHS.
Having said that, in fairness to Both Lives Matter and their campaign, 100,000 people, whether it's 100,000 or 80,000, based on what we would agree on, a considerable number of people were not aborted because the legislation wasn't in place here.
Well, have they? Because do we have figures of the number of women who have travelled, as I mentioned, for example, to other parts of Europe, the number of women who put their lives at risk and resorted to other desperate measures? We're very much concerned with the human rights violations that our laws here create. It's not something to be celebrated that our laws carry the harshest criminal penalties in Europe and fail to protect women who have been raped, are victims of incest. And what about those women who hear that they're pregnancy, unfortunately, has been given a fatal diagnosis at the minute, and by not legislating for change, our Assembly is failing those women. And we know that approximately, because again, as I've mentioned, figures are very hard to gauge on this issue, up to 2,000 women leave Northern Ireland every year to access these services. Now, that reality is a damning indictment of the Executive's failure to prioritise women's healthcare. We would say the change is long overdue, and the change is coming. We've obviously had the court case, and there's the ruling and the appeal pending. But nonetheless, the courts here have ruled that there is a breach of women's rights, and we hope then now what will follow is a change in our legislation.
Gráinne, I'm looking at a picture of two really healthy, smiling, jolly twins who were actually introduced to this world on the 23rd week. Now, there's a 24-week viability of a baby. These kids came into the world on the 23rd week, and they are smiling, happy, healthy, flawless children. You would have been happy for those children to have been aborted.
Well, your slant is that we would have been happy for these children to be aborted. What we say is that governments have the right to impose gestational limits. They are something which are kept regularly under review by the UK government, because, of course, there is a point in pregnancy at which a fetus becomes viable. That's why we have gestational limits. What we say as Amnesty is that we're very concerned that women who are in very desperate circumstances are not being looked after here. And I know that Dawn and others point to a need for perinatal hospice care, for example. That's something that absolutely should be in place, because, as I mentioned, it's about women's choices. And what we say is that they should be provided for and fully supported through the NHS here. What we shouldn't be saying to women here is that for those who have money, they will always circumvent the law and travel. But do those poorer women, that we don't care about your healthcare.
Is this something that's going to be resolved in Northern Ireland? Is this something that there's going to be final agreement on, because the polls seem even further apart than any issue that our politicians would be bickering over in this day and age. Yeah.
Well, we have had attempts, obviously, by the former Justice Minister, David Ford, who was bringing forward a private member's bill. The political institutions now have collapsed and we are facing an election on the 2nd of March. But already David Ford has signalled that he will be bringing forward legislation in cases of fatal abnormalities. That doesn't go far enough for us, but we'll certainly be working with the political institutions to ensure that our laws are human rights compliant. But what we have to remember as well is that there is overwhelming public support for these changes. The Northern Ireland public understand that this is very much a human rights issue, that women should have access to these services, not least in the cases that I've outlined. So what we need is for our politicians to wake up and to bring our laws in line with those standards.
Do you at Amnesty International, just to be clear on this, are you in keeping, as far as your mindset and your beliefs are concerned, with legislation in Canada where a child can be aborted right up to birth?
No, our policy is, for the basically what I've outlined there to you, Frank, our policy, we're calling for these changes, and we've been a part of the court challenges here around fatal abnormalities, rape and incest, but also we're looking at decriminalisation, and there was something that was mentioned there when Dawn referred to.
But do you support the Canadian alternative? Does Amnesty International support the law in Canada?
I've mentioned that the governments are well within their rights to enforce gestational limits, and that's what we have, obviously, that the UK government keep regularly under review. But I do have to correct something that was mentioned when Dawn was speaking, which was around full decriminalisation and calls for that. What that doesn't mean is legalisation. It means that women are not treated as criminals, that women's healthcare is dealt with through healthcare policy, because at the minute we treat women like criminals. It's criminal justice legislation that goes back to 1861. So that's what we want to see changed.
There'll be no resolving of this issue in particularly this part of the world. It's one of these emotive topics. It's the group that I was speaking to, Both Lives Matter, they maintain they don't protest in the street. Other groups do protest in the street, but they'll become more and more vocal the more the possibility arises that the law is going to change. I put it to Dawn McAvoy, this is not about the 1967 Abortion Act coming here, but people do feel there's a chipping away, and that eventually it may not be the 1967 Abortion Act or the 2017 Abortion Act, but it could be the 2027 Abortion Act in Northern Ireland.
Well, I do think that we're going to have legislative change here. I think we're closer to that now than ever before, and I think that's something to be welcomed. Yes, there will always be a vocal and very strident minority who make their voices known when change is pending. But we know from polls, for example, that 72% of people think abortion should be available if the pregnancy is a result of rape and incest, 67% in cases of fatal abnormalities, and 58%, more than half of people here, think abortion should be decriminalised so that there would be no criminal penalty for women who have abortions here. So what we can see is that the public mindset has very much changed on this issue. The people of Northern Ireland are compassionate. They understand women's healthcare. They understand that access should be there. And they're supportive of those changes. Now our Assembly and Executive have to play catch-up to where the public already are on this matter.
In relation to abortion, I'm certainly not talking about where there's rape or where there's some form of an attack on a woman or incest is involved. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about abortion and the baby has been formed between the interaction of the man and the woman. Should the man have any say?
Oh, that, again, our policy and the change that we've been calling for is in the areas that I've mentioned, which would bring Northern Ireland in line with minimum human rights standards. So what you're talking about there is a much wider debate and possibly a discussion for another day, Frank.
But is it a discussion for another day? If I've got a partner who wants an abortion and I want the baby, should I not have a say?
Well, again, we're very much concerned with women's rights and the woman in these circumstances. If a woman requires access to these services. At the minute, her only option is to travel. We do have legislation here which permits it in very restrictive circumstances, but we know in practice that's not the reality. And there's a lot of disparity between the various health trusts and women trying to access those services. So the change that we're calling for, and I have to just repeat, is in those circumstances that I've mentioned.
Yes, but Amnesty International come across as being very supportive of the woman who wants the abortion, not very supportive of the fetus who maybe doesn't want to be aborted, and certainly not supportive of the man who'd like to be a father.
I mean, we have to consider, I mean, it's the woman who will obviously carry the pregnancy. We have to consider the woman and whether or not she wants to continue in a pregnancy in these very difficult circumstances. We should not be ignoring women and disregarding her rights because there are those who would seek to extend the right to life prenatally. The right to life has never extended prenatally. The right to what we're concerned with are women's rights in these matters, and that's very much where the human rights standards and human rights legislation is.
But what if it's not a complex or difficult pregnancy? It's simply a woman who doesn't want to be a mother.
Well, our campaign is in the areas I've mentioned, so that's what I can speak to.
But does the man have any right? Does the man have any right as far as Amnesty International is concerned?
Well, not as far as international human rights standards are concerned.
There will be people who'd be surprised by that coming from Amnesty.
Well, coming from human rights standards and those that we work to then. But again, this kind of gets away from the actual change that we have proposed here in Northern Ireland, which, you know, is very, very minimal. And also we're waiting on the appeal ruling from the Court of Appeal here on that. So I think what we need to deal with is the court, or the change that is proposed. We need to see what the courts have to say on that matter. And then we need to look to our politicians in the Assembly and the Executive to show leadership on this matter and finally bring our laws in line with human rights standards.
Okay, fair enough. Gráinne Taggart, thanks for your time this morning. Thank you.
Thanks.